welcome to Higher Ed, KUT's podcast focusing on issues of higher education, lifelong learning, and exercising the brain. I'm Jennifer Staton with KUT 90.5, Austin's NPR station, talking as always with Dr. Ed Berger, president of Southwestern University in Georgetown, Texas. Hello and welcome, Ed.
Hello, Jennifer. Well, I should say welcome to you because you're on the beautiful Southwestern University campus here in our soundstage.
That's right. I am here on campus. Always very happy to be here. It's always fun to take a field trip.
Is it a soundstage or a sound studio? I guess more of a sound studio. There's no stage here.
I guess
we're sitting.
We don't have an audience. We don't have folks with us. I would say it's more of a studio.
Well, I hope
than a
we
stage.
Have an audience.
Well,
it's not
they're just
live
not.
With
they're
us
just not. With,
moment.
It would get a little crowded in here. It'd be a little cozy. So, Ed, I want to refer back to we've been hearing from listeners. We always invite listeners to email me. I'll remind you that address. It's jstaton, S-T-A-Y-T-O-N, jstaton at KUT.org. We'd love to hear from listeners who have questions for you, who have ideas for topics.
We've answered some in the past.
We have answered
Trixie.
Some.
I remember the name Trixie.
Yes. Well, and she, one of the questions that she wrote, I kind of want to dig a little deeper into.
You're kidding. This is a question from Trixie, and
yeah,
I happened to get her name right?
She was great because she emailed in several questions.
Oh, I see.
And one of them.
I just like the name Trixie.
I do too. One of them was she wanted to know what inspires you. What, and I'm going to add who, because oftentimes I think our inspiration comes from people and interactions. And I'm curious if you have a person or people that you can think back over the course of your life and career and go, wow, that person really guided me, advised me, really, you know,
yeah,
made a difference.
Well, it's interesting. So what inspires me and who, they're kind of interconnected, which is interesting. I hadn't really thought about this. But I would say to answer the first question, what inspires me, it really is the promise and the hope of trying to change people's lives through their thinking. So how thinking can impact, and whether it's socioeconomic movement that, you know, by your creativity and your innovation and just your effective thinking, you can just excel and be greater. Or just to enliven and enrich life. To me, that is really my inspiration. That's why I've given my life and my career to thinking about education. And I think that manifests itself from the individuals who have actually inspired me. So it's interesting that those two things are connected. I guess that's not surprising.
Yeah.
And I'll just give you a kind of a quick list of names and you can stop at anyone that you want. Of course, my parents, obviously, and my dad was a very creative thinker who I think taught me an awful lot as my mom. But then in school, I mean, it you know, they were teachers that really inspired me, and they tended to be math teachers when I started to excel at mathematics, and they weren't always the nicest or the most friendly, but sometimes the strictest ones were the ones that really inspired me, and they also inspired me in terms of how I found my voice as a teacher, that I would take pieces of these different individuals and incorporate them into my own teaching style. And so, you know, I tend to be kind of pretty serious in the classroom. People think, oh, taking a class with Berger would be fun and zany.
I'm surprised.
I'll make a joke and I'll try to be comical and, you know, I'll try to be affable, but I'm very strict. You know, things need to be done and so forth. So I had a couple of really amazing teachers of that sort. I think that one of my favorite teachers from high school was a woman by the name of Lisa Metzler, who taught me calculus my senior year, and I loved her. She was amazing. And she would speak, and she was talking about calculus, and the words instantly made sense in my head. I never had an experience where a human being was able to communicate abstract ideas so quickly into my brain. I never had a study for calculus because we just connected, and she was an amazing, amazing teacher. I to this day, I still love her.
So it's interesting, boy, so much in there. And I think this is such a rich topic because I think, you know, nobody can go through life and not be impacted by, you know, parents from the beginning. Often it is teachers. But one thing you said that was so interesting was it's not always the teacher who was the nicest or the friendliest who has the most impact. And I think it's interesting to think about teachers as role models and mentors and how our perception of that experience changes as we mature and grow into whatever our interests.
And I think that's true. I think that a lot of times when you get that tough love, whether it's from a parent, relative, friend, or a teacher, at the time you're thinking of all sorts of expletives. And then later in life you go, you know what? That person really you know, was trying to get me to do something, and I appreciate it. You know, sometimes I had that epiphany later in life, and at the time I thought some awful thoughts. Sometimes these mean people, I just love them then. I had one of my favorite teachers from high school was a woman math teacher by the name of Clemmy Jensen. Can you
– Clemmy. Oh, that's a great name.
C-L-E-M-M-Y. Clemmy okay. Jensen. And she was like 500 years old at the time. She probably was like 50, but at the, you know, when you're in high school.
Right, when you're young.
And she was
different.
Really tiny. She was like about 5'1". So she was this tiny little – you know, kind of prim, older woman. And I think because she – I mean, I became friends with her over the intervening years, and she shared with me that because – she was an engineer actually for many, many years.
Oh, wow.
And she decided to go into math teaching later in life. And she said because of her stature and because she was a woman – this is back in the 1970s – she realized that she couldn't put up with any nonsense in the classroom. She was the strictest teacher I ever had. And she would not ever crack a smile. So if you got her just to have the end of her lip curl up, you knew. So my goal was to try to make her laugh, you know, and I would do it occasionally because I think she liked me. But she was tough as nails. I learned more about – I took geometry with her. I remember everything I took. I took geometry with her. I took a trigonometry with her. And I took – I guess that was it, geometry and trigonometry. Those are two courses. And she was amazing and I loved her. But she was not fun or funny.
Doesn't sound like it.
No.
You know, another interesting aspect I think of thinking about role models and teachers, and this kind of goes along with what we discuss a lot, which is lifelong learning. I'm always intrigued by the situations where the teacher or the role model is somewhat unexpected.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it may be, I guess, you know, in your case, it may be a student who brings something to class and your role's kind of reversed. I know for me, my stepdaughter is considerably younger than I am, but teaches me a tremendous amount every day. And I think in those situations, it's exciting and wonderful that the teacher is not necessarily who you expect.
Exactly. And one of the greatest gifts that we can give ourselves is to be open to that reality that anybody can teach us something. And if you go through life that way, It's the greatest gift of all because every time you meet someone, doesn't matter who they are, what their state in life is, how old they are, how young they are, they can provoke a thought. I mean, all life is trying to provoke thought, right? Is to be thought provoking, and anyone can do that. And absolutely right. I mean, and I've heard colleagues at Southwestern University faculty say to me, I often learn more from my students than from anyone else, and that's been the case in my case because even when they ask a question. By asking a question, it helps provoke thought, even if you're trying to answer it. But also the insights. You know, here I am, a mathematician. You know, I'm crusty. I'm old. I've been doing this now for over 30 years. You have a student who's seeing some mathematical idea for the first time, and their natural response might be something that I would never have considered, and yet there's some insight in there that really is impactful and meaningful.
So I'm ready for the answer to the puzzler.
Oh, the puzzler.
I am ready. I'm going to say on this one, you're going to be the teacher. I'm going to be the student because I'm still struggling with this a little.
Actually,
I'm off
to a good start. Because I remember what you did last week.
Yes.
I remember what, and I will share with the audience what you drew.
Okay.
In fact, we stopped the show so I could watch you draw, which I'm sure was fascinating for the audience listening.
It makes great radio.
I'm sure
it really
does. Let me remind everyone what the puzzler was, first of all. This is from my effective thinking and creative puzzle solving class that I teach at Southwestern University. And this one is entitled, When 6 equals 8. And the challenge is, draw 6 straight line segments of equal length so that they form 8 equilateral triangles, 8 triangles in which each side of the 3 sides of each triangle has the same length.
Mm-hmm.
And I also suggested that there's actually more than one way to do this.
Yes, which is
now,
exciting.
Now, let me tell the listening audience what you immediately did when I read this puzzle last week.
Uh-huh.
What our great Jennifer Staten did was she drew an equilateral triangle. Imagine like a triangle kind of, you know, face up, mm-hmm. kind of, you know, sharp point up. And then she immediately drew an equilateral triangle kind of face down. And so she created kind of a diamond with a little horizontal line mm-hmm. going through it. So
the
almost,
side they share.
I mean, technically what you did was draw a rhombus with a diagonal, by the way, just to prove that I'm still a mathematician at heart. That's a great guess. It has tons of flaws, right? I mean, sure. First of all, you only produced two triangles,
right.
not
I'm
eight.
A few short, yes.
And also, you only used 1, 2, 3,
right.
4, 5.
I was not finished yet. That was my start, but mm-hmm. I haven't – I'm not – every sort of path I took from there kept having similar issues, like enough triangles.
But the way to think about this, and you would have hit upon it if yeah. you would have thought about it in the following way. What if those two triangles that are sharing a side uh-huh. were independent and could move a little bit? Then imagine if that top triangle were to be pushed down and the bottom triangle were to be pushed up. They would then cross each other a little bit. And notice that then you would need to not have a shared side. You would
right.
have a bottom for that top triangle, and you'd have a top for the bottom triangle, which means you would now have a total of six. So what you're basically doing when you pass
–
so what shape is – there's a famous shape that you're actually making when you pass – that top one a little beneath the bottom one. Can you figure that out?
Mm-hmm.
So you have the bottom one.
Now I'm watching
one.
You draw.
Yeah. And now if you take the top one.
Oh.
When they cross each other, you produce like a star.
Yeah.
Like a Star of David kind
Got
of thing.
It. Okay.
Now if you think about a Star of David, it's made by two
yes.
triangles. They're two large triangles. The
yes.
two that you started with. Those are your two triangles. But then there's these little triangles on the pointy part of the star. And how many are there?
One, two, three, four, five, six.
And then the two we started with give us eight.
Oh, nice.
So there you have it. Eight triangles. Now, there's another way, but I'll let the audience, the home listener, figure out a second way of doing
okay.
this, which is totally different.
And if you figure out that way, I want to hear from you. So email that in to me, jstaiton, S-T-A-Y-T-O-N. Email me jstaiton@kut.org. And we'll go over some of those. We'll revisit this one in the future,
but
depending
only,
on answers.
But at Southwestern University, I want to tell you something about Southwestern.
Okay.
We have an honor code.
Yes.
There's no cheating allowed.
Don't Google this.
I see you knew exactly where I was going.
Don't
if you're
going to
Google it and look for a second solution and
no.
think you're so smart, you are cheating. And if you're cheating, you're cheating the president of Southwestern and you're cheating Morning Edition's KUT host. You do not cheat us.
So yeah, we're gonna so go
you
by
have
the
to
honor
sign,
system.
You
here.
Have to sign an honor pledge saying I pledge that I did not, in fact, look on the interweb
to find the solution to this.
Exactly.
And do email me in that other solution, and we'll take a look at those down the road here. So Ed, I just want to wrap up our discussion about role models and teachers and mentors. You know, I think all of us would consider ourselves role models, but also the recipient still of mentoring and role modeling and teaching. So you're in touch with so many students at Southwestern and all over the country through your math videos and other venues. Do you have some philosophies or wisdom that you like to share with folks who come to you with questions about education, life? What do you like to share when you're in the role model seat?
Well, that's a very big question. I'd say that I've been sharing that with you for now a season and a half, because all of these things that we talk about are things that I typically share with anyone who asks for some kind of advice. The one of the great joys about my job as president is that I truly engage with students, not just the ones in my class, but I have open office hours, and students come in and they want to talk about their lives, and I will challenge them, and I will give them tough love. For their consideration. I always preface everything for saying this is for your consideration. I'm not telling you what to do. I'll tell you what I think you should do, but up to you. It's your life. The meta thing that I always share, and we've talked about this a billion times and even today, is that it's okay to not be perfect, and it's okay to make a mistake, and it's okay to fail in the noble pursuit of eventually realizing some form of greatness, some epiphany, some understanding, some depth of knowledge. That's a natural part of the process. And so to the students that I engage with via video and to the students I engage with in real life at Southwestern and beyond, that really is the ultimate message, that we should not strive to be perfect, but we should strive to learn from everything we do, even the things that don't quite work out the way we want.
Well, thanks, Ed, for always helping us to learn every week. Dr. Ed Berger is president of Southwestern University in Georgetown, Texas. You can find out more at southwestern.edu, and you can keep your brain sharp by keeping up with the news and other episodes of Higher Ed at KUT.org. You can also find us on iTunes. I'm Jennifer Staiton with KUT News.